Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 67. I'm Jim Cornwall and this is the weekly LaBiotech podcast, and it's being aired on Friday the 13th of October, if you're superstitious. This week we're tackling natural killer cells and the work of US-headquartered Artiva Biotherapeutics. And to give us an in-depth look at natural killer cells and how we can better treat conditions and diseases like cancer and lupus, our guest today is Artiva's CEO, Fred Aslan, MD. So I guess the easy first question then is if you could give me a bit of background on Artiva Biotherapeutics.
Yeah, absolutely. So Artiva's been around for a little over 4 years. We are a San Diego-based company. We are exclusively focused on the biology of NK cells. We have approximately 80 employees, and we have raised over $200 million to date by a great group of VC, crossover, and public investors.
And I guess today we're talking about some of the things that you do. I wonder if you could sort of briefly explain natural killer cells and what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. So an NK cell is a type of immune cell. It stands for natural killer cell. And just like T cells, they can be highly cytotoxic. And our immune system really depends on them to kill defective or foreign cells. So NK cells are also important because they play a role in a mechanism called ADCC. And ADCC biology is really core to what we do. So ADCC stands for antibody-dependent cell-mediated cytotoxicity. And this is one of the main mechanisms by which a monoclonal antibody like Rituxan works in, for example, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So let me just review the biology quickly. So if we take a monoclonal antibody like Rituxan, the way it works is it binds to CD20 on the surface of a cancer cell, and then an NK cell binds to the other end of Rituxan. This construct of Rituxan bound to a cancer cell on one end, and then an NK cell on the other end, activates the NK cell, leading it to release cytokines and toxins, which can then kill the cancer cell, right? So clinically, if you have low numbers of NK cells, or if they are defective, a drug like Rituxan could be less effective when trying to either fight off cancer or when it's being used to kill defective cells in an autoimmune disease like lupus. So the point is, even though a monoclonal antibody can be effective, it may not have an opportunity to work as well because of poor NK cell function. So our hypothesis is that if one provides a bunch more highly active NK cells, then one could enhance the activity of antibodies like Rituxan in a variety of different diseases.
Could you explain a little bit more about CAR T cell therapy as well?
Yeah, so CAR T cell biology is very relevant to what we're doing. As you'll see, we share a lot of similar objectives from a mechanism perspective. So CAR Ts, particularly auto CAR T, has been one of the biggest breakthroughs, right, in the last 10 to 15 years. So auto CAR T is a T cell that has been extracted from the patient and genetically modified to target specific cells. Like NK cells, T cells are highly cytotoxic, and they're called autologous CAR T specifically because you are taking these T cells from a patient and then giving them back to the patient. The great thing about CAR T is that the efficacy has been really exciting. If we use non-Hodgkin's lymphoma as an example, the product can drive really deep responses in patients that have seen many lines of prior therapy. And in some patients, it can literally cure the disease for many years, right? So there have been several products that have come to market, and commercially, they're available for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma. Now, the limitation is that the drug is not available off the shelf. Patients typically need to be hospitalized for 1 to 2 weeks at least in order to be administered the drug, because the therapy can actually be quite toxic and life-threatening, and it's also really expensive. So those are the limitations of auto CAR T. And, you know, as you'll see as we continue the conversation, what we are trying to do is to replicate the efficacy of auto CAR T, but with a product that is a lot more convenient, more benign, less toxicity, and so on.
Are we getting any closer to understanding why people respond differently to treatments? Because that's always one of the variables and great unknowns, I guess.
Yeah, and this is a complicated topic because I'm not sure it's any different for CAR T than it is for any therapy that's targeting late line cancer. So, as you know, cancer is a very heterogeneous disease, particularly in the late line setting after many things have been tried, right? So, the cancer that is left is typically resistant to whatever armamentarium we have. So, the question of why it may not work in some patients. It could be that there's patient variability on how they process the drug. It could be that the different tumor types are harder to get. It could be that the potency of the drug may not work in certain specific cancer cells that are still around. It could be that those cells have resistance to auto CAR T. It could be the presence of some of those cells on differential tissue that the cells may not get into. So there's a host of reasons for why, you know, it's so hard to eradicate the cancer. But the good news is our biotech community is developing a very broad array of therapies with very different mechanisms. That way, hopefully, eventually, we can get to all the different ways the cancer fights back.
You mentioned some of the issues with developing therapies. What are the main challenges when it comes to developing natural killer cells for treatment?
Yeah, I would say the biggest challenge with NK cells is really manufacturing. And I'm going to use CAR T cells as a comparison so you understand that better. So T cells, once they're administered to patients, they can expand 100 to 1,000 times. And they can persist for weeks and sometimes months, right? NK cells, particularly if they're not genetically modified, they don't expand. And they don't generally persist for more than 1 to 2 weeks. So if you're trying to give NK cells a chance to actually be as effective as T cells, you really need to give high doses and frequent doses of NK cells in order for them to work. So you need a highly scalable manufacturing process to produce such large amounts. So let me just quantify that for you. So whereas a typical auto CAR T dose could be around 60 million auto CAR T cells, the highest dose that our patients are seeing in our ongoing NHL trial are 60 billion NK cells over several months, right? So we're comparing 60 billion to 60 million. So the productive process really needs to be 1,000 times more effective. Now, you could think of this being very inefficient, right? Given that you have to give 1,000 times more drug. But our process is already very scalable. We source today NK cells from umbilical cord units. And from one umbilical cord unit, we can make trillions of NK cells. So if you can sort out the manufacturing challenges, it's very worthwhile to try this. Because if one can get similar efficacy with NK cell therapy, now you have an off-the-shelf product. They are safer to administer. You don't require hospitalization and so on.
You mentioned safer administration. How do you balance efficacy with safety?
We can think of safety as a spectrum. On one end, you can think of how Rituxan is used today. So you have a community infusion center. They have Rituxan stored. So it's available off the shelf. A patient will come into the infusion center. They're given Rituxan. They're watched. And then they go home. Rituxan is generally safe, so it's very feasible to manage the patients at home and then bring them in the unlikely event that there's some serious reaction or complication, but that's uncommon. So it's much better for the patient because they get to go home. It's convenient for the community center because there are so many more community centers spread out throughout the U.S. as opposed to the, you know, fewer number of specialized CAR T centers. And it's better for payers because patients are not being hospitalized, right? On the other end of the spectrum, you have the auto CAR T procedure, right? So it's really a procedure when you think about it. It starts with apheresis. So apheresis is the process by which you collect the T cells. Think about it as almost like a dialysis procedure where blood is taken out, it's filtered, and then it's given back to the patient. In this case, with apheresis, the blood is taken out, the T cells are separated out, and then the rest of the blood is given back to the patient. And this can last, let's say, a couple of hours. Then the sample is sent to a GMP lab. In this GMP lab, the product is genetically engineered, it's expanded, and it can sometimes take up to 4 weeks to have the product available again for the patient. People are now trying to get it down to 1 to 2 weeks, but you can see how this part of the process is particularly problematic with an aggressive cancer where the patient may not be able to wait weeks for the therapy. Then the patient needs to be hospitalized. You see, the administration of CAR T can cause some serious side effects where the immune system of the patient can get out of hand, and it needs to be managed very closely because if it escalates, the patient may need to be admitted to the ICU and it can become life-threatening. Right? So it's not ideal for a community center because they can't give the drug. They have to refer the patient on. It's not good for the patient because they need to travel. They need to be hospitalized. There's the concerns around the side effects. And it's bad for payers because of how much they're spending on the procedure and the hospitalized patient. Now, our NK cell therapy is closer to the example I gave you of rituximab. If the efficacy is the same, right, then it's almost a no-brainer. You would prefer the therapy that is off the shelf and safer and so on. But the real question, which is getting back to what you asked, is how much efficacy would you sacrifice for this preferred profile, right? On the one hand, you could say, well, would anyone want a less effective drug, right? But on the flip side, we have to recognize the fact that it's been almost 10 years since the first CAR T has been approved. And a majority of patients that would be eligible for NHL, they're not referred to actually do CAR T because of all the negatives that I mentioned. So I think only with time after we have an opportunity as a field to actually see what efficacy we get, hopefully it's very close or the same as auto CAR T. If not, then it becomes a judgment call of how much less efficacy is acceptable for this preferred profile.
Could you go into a bit of detail about what your product AlloNK is and how it works?
Yeah, so AlloNK is Artiva's proprietary off-the-shelf cryopreserved NK cell. We today make vials of 1 billion NK cells per vial. It's currently shipped to a community center. It's thawed. There's a 5 to 10 minute infusion, and it can be administered with monoclonal antibodies. So as I mentioned, you know, we derive our NK cells from umbilical cord, and from one umbilical cord unit, we can make trillions of NK cells. So one interesting factoid, 15% of the population has a couple of genetic variations that make their NK cells more active than the average NK cell. So one of them, for example, is the affinity that the NK cell has for binding to a monoclonal antibody like Rituxan. So there are clinical trials that show that when you have this variant, you have better survival when you're being treated with monoclonal antibodies. So we specifically select cord from this 15% of the population that has these two genetic variants. And so all of our NK cells have this particular phenotype. We are in the clinic today with AlloNK. We're treating patients with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and we're planning to start a trial in lupus shortly. Both of those clinical uses have a similar mechanism where we are targeting B cells. So in cancer, in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, for example, B cells become malignant, right? And you're trying to kill them. In an autoimmune disease like lupus, the B cells become defective and they produce autoantibodies that start to attack your organs. And in lupus, this can be also really serious. So for example, many patients with lupus nephritis, where the lupus attacks their kidney, many of them go on to require dialysis and even a kidney transplant because of the severity of the disease. So our goal is to deeply kill the B cells with our AlloNK being given in combination with a monoclonal antibody like Rituxan. The hypothesis is that the NK cell coming from a donor, highly active, it can enhance the activity of Rituxan so that it kills B cells with the same intensity as auto CAR T could do, right? That's the hypothesis. And if it works well, then you have all the advantages we discussed before. Off the shelf, can be given in the community, safer, lower COGS, and so on.
How often does it need to be administered?
Yeah, so for our lupus trial, we will be giving 3 doses of AlloNK and 2 doses, and we're starting with rituximab, which we are giving in these patients. In our NHL trial, since you're trying to replicate the area under the curve of an auto CAR T, we have given weekly doses of 1 billion cells, and now we're giving 4 billion cells, and we have done that up to 16 times in one patient. So there's quite a bit of flexibility.
How many doses can you get from one umbilical cord?
So one umbilical cord can yield trillions of cells. And depending on the dose that you're using on the patient, if you're using, for example, 10 billion cells per patient, then you're talking about hundreds of patients that you could treat with a single umbilical cord. And if the dose is closer to 50 billion or 60 billion, then you're talking about, you know, several dozens of patients that could be treated with one umbilical cord.
You're not going to run out of potential supply of the NK cells then?
No, well, that would be a phenomenal problem to have, because if we think about all the different blood banks that exist and all the cords that are stored, even though we're selecting only cords that are in that 15% that I mentioned, there are thousands of cords that are stored just in the US, not including around the world.
Can you tell me a little bit about FDA clearance and about the setup of the trials?
Yeah, so very recently we announced that we have an IND cleared to pursue AlloNK in lupus. You see, the bar, I'll give you the relevance of that. The bar in cancer for all of us developing off-the-shelf products is quite high, because auto CAR T has been in the market for 6 to 7 years, and we have follow-up data for many years from thousands of patients, right? So back to our discussion, how much efficacy could you sacrifice in order for a more convenient product? Well, I would say that the bar is higher if you are coming in, you know, 5 to 10 years behind, because now you're comparing a product where you can show 10-year durability, as opposed to one where, you know, most companies with an off-the-shelf product only have 1 or 2 years of follow-up, right? So it's hard to catch up. But in autoimmunity, it's a very nascent field. It was only 9 to 12 months ago that a German academic group reported efficacy of auto CAR T in lupus, and the efficacy was really spectacular. So we're coming on the heels of that data. And currently, we think we are in pole position because of this IND allowance. As far as we can tell, we are the first company with an off-the-shelf cell therapy that has IND allowance to pursue lupus, using a therapy that we hope will be as efficacious as auto CAR T, but with the preferred profile that we have been discussing. So our work in autoimmunity is frankly what is generating the most excitement, because when you think about it, in heme indications with effective therapies, you can treat hundreds to thousands of patients, but in a single disease like lupus nephritis, you could treat tens of thousands of patients. So an order of magnitude, you know, greater clinical impact.
Very good news for the patients. Are there a lot of companies working in this field at the moment? I know you said you were kind of at the forefront, but is it something that lots of companies are working on?
Yeah, given the efficacy seen with auto CAR T, and given the fact that there are many other therapies that are in development for, you know, an off-the-shelf, either CAR T or NK cells, we imagine that there's going to be a number of companies also entering this field. We already know that a number of them have mentioned publicly they're beginning to evaluate this preclinically. So I wouldn't be surprised if over the next 12 to 18 months, we actually see quite a few of these entering the field.
You mentioned some of the advantages in the way that it's produced. Does that significantly reduce cost and improve scalability?
It really does, very meaningfully, because when you think about it, the way CAR T is done today, you have a suite in a GMP lab that is dedicated to actually expanding and genetically engineering those T cells, but it's all for one patient. So you take the expenses of running that suite, and they can't be allocated across many patients. It's just one patient. But as part of our process, because we have an off-the-shelf process, we have the umbilical cord come in, we develop a master cell bank, and then we can, via different batches, produce enough drug to treat many patients. So those expenses of the suite can now be allocated across many patients. It gives us an ability to actually produce at a lower cost. And if you can produce at a lower cost, that gives you some pricing flexibility. Auto CAR T today is at least a $500,000 procedure. And, you know, believe it or not, it's barely profitable for the companies that actually sponsor the process because of how expensive the manufacturing is. So, you know, one of the advantages of our process, not only just, you know, the notions that we discussed before, but the fact that this could be a procedure that could be 80, 90% plus margins, depending on where it's priced, and we could probably price lower than where auto CAR T is.
What about the implications in terms of storage and transportation? Is it something that you could ship around the world, or would you need to replicate what you're doing now in different countries in order to be able to do that?
No, it's something that's already available, right? It's called cold chain logistics. It just means that the product needs to be stored, whether it's in liquid nitrogen at a facility, or whether you're using now more sophisticated forms of actually, for example, there's a company where you can actually place your vials of cryopreserved cell in a container. The container is fairly small, like a box. You can ship it out and it stays cryopreserved until it gets received in the clinic. And over there, it can stay for a few days, it's thawed, and then given to the patient. So the cold chain logistics to actually transport cryopreserved products is already in place. It's not something that we have to innovate or we have to build.
You would theoretically be able to ship, say, to Europe, I mean, notwithstanding any regulatory issues, but it's easy to do.
Absolutely. So there are, you know, central storage facilities throughout the world that you can choose. So today, for example, we use a central storage facility in Texas, and then we have all the different clinical sites that we have up and running around the country. And from this central location, we ship product to all the different sites.
Right. I just didn't know whether it was something whereby if you were to set up in Japan, whether you'd need to produce there or whether it would be more economically viable to produce what you need to produce in the location.
Yeah, no, to your point, it's a purely regulatory matter. So today, we source umbilical cord units in the US from blood banks that have a BLA in place, and we are able to actually use the product in the US. We're now working with the European regulatory authorities to actually have a mechanism to have the product be administered in Europe. So it really is a regulatory, not a supply chain challenge.
Good news too, yeah. Could you tell me a little bit about your collaborations and partnerships that you have ongoing?
Yeah, so I think our collaboration likely to yield the greatest clinical impact in the near term is actually with a company called Affimed, which you interviewed just a couple of weeks ago, right? So Affimed has developed a biologic that enhances the activity of NK cells. But what they have seen is that the product works better if it's given with a donor-derived NK cell. So this has been the experience so far in Hodgkin's lymphoma. If you give the product as monotherapy, it doesn't work as well as when donor-derived NK cells are also given. So Affimed selected Artiva because of the quality, consistency, and the manufacturing of AlloNK. I think it's safe to say that AlloNK is probably today the most advanced non-genetically modified donor-derived NK cell therapy product available out there. And this is why Affimed selected Artiva. So Affimed is sponsoring a study in Hodgkin's lymphoma that will start before the end of this year. So we should see some meaningful clinical data next year.
Is it something that you envisage this will be something that they maybe take every or periodically to maintain their health, or that you're able to cure people?
Time will tell. In non-Hodgkin's lymphoma so far, I mentioned to you that we give weekly doses of AlloNK with a monoclonal antibody, and our patients are eligible to receive up to 4 cycles. And then the treatment stops and we follow patients. So we have seen, I mean, our trial is relatively early, but we have seen that we have a number of patients that get responses, and those responses are durable at least to within a 9 to 12 month period. So time will tell whether they would need a retreatment. For now, we're trying to figure out how long can we keep them in a deep response. I would say the same thing in Hodgkin's lymphoma. As part of the Affimed trial, they're giving up to 3 cycles and then monitoring patients for follow-up. In lupus nephritis, we can give up to 2 cycles. This is what we have discussed with FDA, But we are hoping to give one cycle and then see what that does to the patient and how durable that is. So time will tell in different diseases what that tempo will be. And one of the advantages is that, again, because this can be given in a community setting, the bar to actually having a repeat cycle should be a lot lower than considering a repeat auto CAR T procedure.
Sure, yeah. So where do you go from here in terms of, I mean, obviously you can't give exact timelines, but what's next?
Yeah, so 2024 should be a really exciting year for us across all indications. So as we talked about in autoimmunity, with the IND cleared, we're now, you know, recruiting sites, and we hope to be dosing the first patient early next year to have some clinical data by year end. Our NHL trial continues to enroll, so we should have a nice data set and some good follow-up. So we should have an opportunity to see how durable some of the responses that we have actually are. And then, as I mentioned, with Affimed, the trial in Hodgkin's lymphoma is starting towards the end of this year, and we should have some meaningful clinical data readout as the year progresses in 2024. So it should be a really good clinical year for us in terms of readouts across different indications.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention?
Like most things in biotech, you're always trying to take things to the next level, right? So again, we really tip our hats to all the work that has been done with auto CAR T, because it has actually made a really big impact to a lot of patients. We're just trying to work in a new generation of cell therapy that is a lot more benign, easier to use, much more like a monoclonal antibody. And we're all here at Artiva really excited about the progress we've made so far and what's to come in 2024.
You'd mentioned about the clinical trials. Is that a bottleneck? I mean, is it easy to find people, or is that a challenge?
You know, it's always a challenge because we are going after diseases where, fortunately for patients, there's many, many, many different therapies, right, that are trying to test efficacy. So I would say that whether you're talking about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or Hodgkin's lymphoma or lupus, there are so many ongoing trials that it's always a challenge. But generally, you try to overcome that with two things. One, if you have a therapy that is likely to yield a substantially better result than what is typical, then that will help enroll patients, right? So using lupus as an example, the data that we have seen with auto CAR T has really cured lupus in a, you know, a small subset of patients that have been tried as part of this academic study. So that is more likely. A trial that has the potential to drive that level of efficacy is more likely to get the physician, the investigator, as well as the patient's attention. The second thing is you just try to go out to as many sites as you can in order to increase the chances that you can enroll patients fast enough. But I would say that is a general bottleneck for our entire field.
Really interesting. And I think the most important is the bottom line, and that's that it's got the potential to help an awful lot of people more cheaply than the multi-million dollar techniques that are in use right now. So all good.
Yeah, that's the plan. Stay tuned.
Well, I really enjoyed that conversation with Fred. And a quick reminder, check out the latest news and articles over at labiotech.eu. And I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening, and you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.